They overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Shoot, they score!
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We can put the Crosby score!
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make a bleed for it, and we did.
He doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks. No player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien posts it in! It's a rocket of a shot!
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Beagle will take the draw against Lowry. Beagle went it cleanly back toward the line for Carlson. Pushed it toward the net. Backhand shot by Beagle. They score! Beagle and Washington, with 30 seconds remaining in the third period, have taken a 3-2 lead.
A heartbreaking loss, if there ever was one, for the Winnipeg Jets last night versus the Washington Capitals. Coming back from two goals down late in the third period, only to see it slip away with 30 seconds to go, and Jay Beagle, the hero for the team from the nation's capital to our south. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca. We welcome you to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, and we're thrilled to welcome to the program Joel Marcoux. You, of course, hear him regularly on TSN 1290. Joel going to be joining us on a regular basis here on NHL This Week. Joel, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for the invite.
Our pleasure to have you, Joel. We know you bring a very a good analysis and a good insight into the Winnipeg Jets and the hockey world in general, so we're thrilled to have you on the program. Ezzy, good evening to you as well. You're looking resplendent on this Wednesday evening.
Yeah, what's going on, Drew? It's great to have Joel in studio. You know, we've had him on Illegal Curve in the past, and he does a great job, as you mentioned, on TSN 1290. So, you know, we lost Richie over the summer. So it's great to grow the Illegal Curve family and, you know, talk a lot of hockey here, even though there's an incredible baseball game coming up, or I should say it should be an incredible Game 7 mm-hmm. between the Cubs and Indians coming up. But, yeah, ready to go here, Drew.
Absolutely, and we'll keep you abreast of anything newsworthy that occurs in Game 7 between the Cubs and the Indians. That first pitch in about at 1 hour's time from now. But of course, we go back to last evening at MTS Center, a 3-2 Winnipeg Jets defeat, as I mentioned, a game that you could certainly make the argument that the Winnipeg Jets deserved a better result, significantly outshooting the Washington Capitals. You can make the argument that they significantly, you know, carried the play in the course of that game, and then they staged that epic comeback only to fall short when their bugaboo, or the bugaboo of faceoffs for this team, rears its ugly head. Jay Beagle cleanly wins the draw. Then Adam Lowry loses a puck battle with Beagle, and Beagle's able to slide it through Connor Hellebuck, giving the Capitals the 3-2 lead. Your takeaways from last night's game, Joel, we'll start with you, and then we'll get Ezzy's thoughts. You know, you obviously saw last night's game. You saw the disappointment on the face of the Jets players.
Sure.
Your thoughts after 60 minutes of last night.
Two things. Number one is that if you look at the Jets' losses so far this season, they're at 1-for-27 in the power play category, so that futility continues, and in the loss category, it's certainly not helping them. Turnovers. Yesterday, the first goal, Tobias Sandstrom, gets pinned against the boards. Very reminiscent to what we saw in that Duck series there back in 15. He gets pinned. Tom Wilson, Kuznetsov, Johansson, Tic-Tac-Toe to Alzner at the point. Blake Wheeler playing a little bit too low. Tries to get back, slide, boom, it's in the back of the net. Not sure if the netminder saw it, but it was still from 50-plus feet out, so you kind of want Connor Hellebuck to maybe try to get that one. Mm-hmm. Same thing on goal number two. Turnover, again, blue line into her own zone. Kuznetsov enters the zone. Stick check by Perreault, stick check by Postma, who rides him right around the net. All of a sudden, wide open, Johansson in front of the goal. Enstrom again, not sure what he was doing there, just kind of twiddling his thumbs. Two goals on two turnovers. Huge, huge mistakes in the Jets, and that's just a reflection, I guess, of the youth. Maybe not full synergy there yet in terms of the line combinations, but those are the two big takeaways for me, is the lack of power play and a couple of turnovers that cost them big.
And Joel, you make a lot of good points, and today, obviously, the focus was especially on the Adam Lowry giveaway on the third goal, the game-winning goal scored by Jay Beagle. And you know, it has been a problem for the Winnipeg Jets. We saw that in the Heritage Classic. Buff had a turnover. Patrick Laine had a turnover in that 3-0 loss to the Edmonton Oilers. Most losses you could point out to one turnover or one save that either Connor Hellebuck or Michael Hutchinson had to make. But at the end of the day, for me, guys, it's also about not finishing. Sure. And the Jets were down to 11 forwards with Sean Mathias leaving the game in the first period. And again, you know, they got 46 shots on Braden Holtby.
Yep.
And that was with 11 forwards. Shots. And that's without Brian Little and Tyler Myers. So I think, you know, the Jets are getting their chances. What did Nikolai Ehlers had 8 shots last night? So, I mean, there were a lot of prime scoring chances. I thought the Washington Capitals looked like a team that were at the end of a Western Canadian road trip. Yep. So, you know, the Jets are struggling to score goals, you know, after Mark Scheifele and after Patrick Laine. You know, they're just not getting much secondary scoring. That was Adam Lowry's first goal of the year. So, you know, good on Adam Lowry. I thought he had a strong game, you know, playing alongside Joel Armia there on the third line. But, you know, it's the same old story for the Jets. I don't think the Jets have played that bad. You know, they've only had 4 wins here in 10 games. But, you know, the goaltending, I don't think is the big concern here. I think it's, you know, getting some of these guys. You know, Blake Wheeler is one guy, even though he had an assist there on Mark Scheifele's goal that put the Jets on the board. You know, Blake Wheeler, I don't think has been, you know, the Blake Wheeler that we expect. Certainly, you know, not the guy who had a career year last year. So, you know, the Jets, I think, you know, the power play is a big concern. It's definitely a big concern. And, you know, I don't know why Patrick Laine wasn't on the first power play unit, Drew. To me, that was a head scratcher.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they don't score on 4 chances, and they continue to have a bottom 5 power play in the NHL. And when is anything going to change? Like, up in the press box last night, I mentioned to Drew, like, are we going to talk again about how the Jets can't score on the power play? Yeah. How many years have we been talking about this?
We talked about it, you know, 3 weeks ago when the season started as the struggles on the power play. We continue to talk about it. You're absolutely right. You mentioned that you're not concerned with the goaltending, and I understand your perspective.
Okay, well, before you continue there.
Okay.
I tweeted this out right after the Connor Hellebuck first goal that he let in, I should say, the goal that was scored by Carl Alzner, and I said I think he was screened there, and everybody got all over me and said that, you know, there's no way that he was screened. If you look at the replay, not only did I think he was screened by Ben Sherratt, I think it might have actually deflected off of Ben Sherratt.
There's no argument for me that he was screened.
Supposed to do on that goal? It changes direction. It's very difficult to save that.
It's a wrist shot from 56 feet away. You want him to be able to fight through. It's not like there was a ton of traffic.
He was screened.
He was screened. I don't dispute that. But you still want him to make that save. And I don't think that the goaltending was the reason the Jets lost yesterday by any stretch. But if you go through probably every one of the Jets' 10 games, maybe not everyone, but pretty close to everyone. Obviously, the shutout that Hutchinson pulled in Colorado doesn't count. And probably last Thursday against Dallas, there weren't any bad goals. So take those 2 games away. In the other eight games, there's probably one goal in each of those games that you would want to say, I'd want my goalie to make that save.
Sure.
And I understand your perspective, Ezzy, about Hellebuck and that first goal yesterday. But from my point of view, that's a save you want your goalie to make.
Part of the job is to battle and try to battle through the screen, isn't it?
Yes.
Even in practice, when you're practicing these kinds of plays, part of your job is to try to prepare yourself for that shot coming through the screen. You have to anticipate it. I mean, there's no question that he was screened, but that's just part of it. And I guess to your point, Drew, is, you know, when we go back to last year and we saw the Jets lose a lot of these games, what was the number one criticism that we were giving the other guy that is now with the Moose? He couldn't make that big save when the Jets needed it, right?
Sure. You're absolutely right. And that's exactly the same issue for the most part. Now, there's been some exceptions. The game against Colorado that Hutchinson pitched the shutout. The game against Dallas, you know, last Thursday, which was their best effort of the season, I would think, so far. Those games, the Jets were a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
But those other 8 games, there have been struggles. And, I mean, it's not overwhelmingly surprising, given that they're your young team and that they're beat up on the back end, particularly with their injuries. I mean, you know, Paul Postma, all due respect, can't play the role that the Jets are asking him to play right now.
Which is on the second pair with Enstrom.
And that's no fault of Paul Postma's. He's got limitations, you know, to his game as a player. And so you're putting him into a very difficult situation playing with Enstrom. Mm-hmm. And a guy who's not suited for that position, makes that turnover, you know, blindly fires a puck right up the middle of the ice that turns into be the second goal. Now, should Enstrom play that differently? Absolutely. And should Hellebuck maybe make that save or after it sort of squeaked through him and then squirted into the net? Maybe. But it starts with the turnover from a player who is being asked to play a role that he's not well suited for.
Right. And guys, we can sit here and we could nitpick this game and every game, and that's what we do on sports radio. But, you know, they're losing one goal games and they're losing more games than they're winning. And it might only be 10 games. And I think it's still early, but if we're talking about these same problems and the Jets being under 500 after 15 games, after 20 games, then as we've talked about many times on this show, once it gets to American Thanksgiving towards the end of November, you know, the Jets are going to find themselves 4 or 5 points out of the playoffs, and it's very difficult to make those games up. So they have a very difficult schedule coming up, and they just can't afford to lose consecutive games. They have to win tomorrow. They can't afford to get no points or 1 point. They have to steal the game. They have to steal a game on the road. They didn't have a very good game on Sunday against Buffalo. They just have to start putting points on the board.
Well, you know, if you look back to 2 years ago when they were a playoff team, even if they lose that game yesterday and they lose it in overtime, you're happy to get that 1 point because you were down 2 goals late in the game and you make the comeback and you get the 1 point for getting it into overtime. To lose that game in regulation and not get any points against a, you know, an outer conference rival where you don't really care if Washington gets 2 points because you're not competing with them for a playoff spot, hurts even more. And 2 years ago, they were at least sending that game into overtime where they had, I don't remember exactly the number, I can look it up, you know, probably 10 or 12 overtime defeats, whereas last year they had very few overtime defeats. It's the difference between probably being a playoff team and being a non-playoff team, because right now they're 4-6. And with no loser points whatsoever, it's hard to be a playoff team if you're losing clean in regulation.
And when you look at those 4 wins, 2 of those are miraculous comebacks that aren't going to happen come game 20, come game 30, come game 40. I mean, they kind of caught a couple of teams off guard in the early portion of the season. You're not going to be overcoming 4-goal deficits at the midway point of the season. You could easily be, you could have 2 wins right now. Mm-hmm. And in these 10 games, they've only had the lead 5 times. I mean, that's the thing. They're starting slowly. Their power play isn't good, and they're not giving their netminders any run support, for lack of a better way of saying it. They're not getting enough goals. So we can, like, as you said, we can nitpick on everything, but really this is, you know,
fundamental issues of not scoring enough and giving up goals at an inopportune time.
Well, you can look and you could look at it 2 ways, right? Like, you could say, well, the Jets are 4-6, so, you know, they're a couple games under 500, but they've played very well when they've lost some games. So, you know, things aren't that bad. But then you could also say, like Joel just mentioned, well, they're lucky to win 2 out of those 4. Out of the 4 wins, I should say, they're lucky to have 2 of those wins. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the power play is definitely concerning. I think the goaltending can be better. And I think the Jets are going to have to make up for some of the injuries that they're dealing with right now. Andrew Kopp, we should mention, was recalled today. You know, it was broken by Joel during the afternoon. But, you know, we should, you know, really be a little bit concerned that the Jets are missing Brian Little, they're missing Sean Mathias, and they're missing a couple of key defensemen.
Hold that thought. On the other side of the break, I want to come back, talk about the loss of Sean Mathias going forward. We'll talk more about the power play, and we'll preview Friday night's game against Detroit. Of course, we know all about the Capitals, the Jets' opponent, tomorrow night. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
As Helm moves it around to the far side, and Athanasiou takes his spot. They score! Bennett! Nice feed by Athanasiou in front.
Well, speed, speed, speed. Look at Darren Helm. He's done a lot of that in the first 6 games. And Vanek very, very smartly gets in the hole in the right spot at the right time. No accident.
Thomas Vanek scoring for the Detroit Red Wings. The Jets, of course, visit the Red Wings on Friday night after they play tomorrow evening the second game of the home-and-home series in Washington. Vanek won't be in the Red Wings lineup. Certainly a break for the Jets as he's their leading scorer. typical Thomas Vanek coming out, starting the season like a house on fire. He's out of the lineup on a week-to-week basis with a lower body injury. Welcome back to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
You know, guys, go ahead.
Les texting me, very upset with the officiating in last night's game. Didn't like that Adam Lowry was called for that tripping penalty behind the Capitals net.
Well, that was a bad call.
On the power play when the front official who was looking at the play didn't make the call, and the back official who was stationed behind the blue line made the call. Les, very upset about that call, so he wanted me to pass that along.
Yeah. No, but I agree with Les. I mean, it wasn't a trip. He fell, and, you know, that shouldn't have been a power play. So I'm with him on that one, and I think when the Jets had that mad goal-mouth scramble that Holtby made that miraculous save on, I think you could have argued that TJ Oshie put his hand on the puck, and that should have been a penalty shot. So, you know, that was maybe not the best night for the referees. I think there was a couple of situations where you could say that there shouldn't have been a penalty or maybe there should have been a penalty. But, of course, Drew, that's not a reviewable call, right?
Right.
You can't challenge that there was a glove on the puck.
You can't challenge a penalty call. You can't challenge a hand over top of the puck. Although, to be perfectly honest, if you're able to challenge offsides that are, you know, a millimeter offside, why can't you challenge a hand being placed over the puck in the crease?
That's a question for Gary Bettman.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that one being, you know, I was fine with no challengeable calls, but now that they're challenging things and, you know, minute offsides, well, hell, you know, the cat's out of the bag at this point in time, so you might as well let everything be challenged. Anyways, let's talk about the Jets power play before we talk about the Jets Red Wings game on Friday night. 0-for-4 last night versus Washington. Entering tonight's action in the NHL, the Jets have had the most power play opportunities in the entire NHL with 44 power play opportunities. They got 5 goals. That's a power play success rate of 11.4%, 25th in the NHL. On pace for 40 power play goals, maybe 40.12 or something if you consider that they've played 10 games and, you know, there's actually 82 games, whatever. If they get 40 power play goals, that would put them bottom 5 in the NHL based on last year's power play results. I ask you guys a question. 2 questions. 1, what's wrong with the Jets' power play? And 2, why wasn't Patrick Laine on the Jets' number 1 power play as the game progressed last night? And 3, what is the ideal Jets' power play in your mind?
Why the Jets' power play is not doing well, that I don't know. I mean, I will say this. The power play does look a little bit better than it did last year. Last year when it was running at, a 30th place clip?
Mm-hmm.
I still think this year's power play looks a little bit better just in the way that they penetrate the offensive zone and actually establish a setup. Whether their shots are getting through or not, that's a different story. So that success will eventually come when they start getting that setup. Patrick Laine should have been on that power play. I'm not sure why he was not. Coach Paul Maurice was, of course, asked about it today and kind of dodged that question quite swiftly and, you know, in a Bettmanian fashion almost. He kind of used his words to kind of dodge it. And I don't know. Maybe is he sheltering him? He said he wanted to get the left-handed shot with Laine to be able to have the setup, you know, Connor and Perreault. So going back to the third question then, if that's what he really wants, to get a left-handed shot, well, then my ideal power play would be to have Laine out there with Byfuglien, Ehlers, Perreault, and maybe have Wheeler or Scheifele either or another right-handed shot out there and work it from there. You want to have that strong one-timer on the left side, which is Laine. Ehlers is your best left-handed shot in terms of a one-timer ability, and then you want to have Dustin Byfuglien on the point right now just based on having no other real point guy healthy unless you put Tobias Sandstrom.
Let me go through the numbers from last night's game. As Patrick Laine in the first period played 1:03 on the power play. In the second period, he played 32 seconds on the power play. And in the third period, he played 38 seconds on the power play. You look at a guy like Adam Lowry. Adam Lowry played 2:20 on the power play in period 1 and 47 seconds on the power play in period 2. Didn't play any power play time in the third period. Paul Maurice making too much of the quote-unquote having a net front presence on the power play, because that's really the role that Adam Lowry has been playing thus far this year on the Jets' power play.
Well, net front presence is important for any coach is going to tell you that you need to have a net front presence on the power play. You also have to move the puck quickly. And, you know, I was just going to say while Joel was dissecting the power play, you know, we've been doing the show for over 7 years, and we've been doing the show for over 5 years since the Jets have been back, and we've been talking about this, and we've kind of had our theories to why the Jets' power play is struggling. But one thing that kind of gets me now, and by the way, the Jets' power play was good in the preseason, and Adam Lowry was out on the first power play unit in front of the net, and he actually scored a goal in the preseason on the power play. Do I think that Adam Lowry should be on the first power play unit? Probably not. I'm a huge fan of Adam Lowry, but there are certainly more skilled players. The fact of the matter is, guys, the Jets have way too many skilled players to have such a bad power play. And Patrick Laine's got 4 of the 5 Jets power play goals so far this year, and he's not out there on the first power play unit. To me, that's a problem. Yeah. And the Jets like to go with 4 forwards and 1 defenseman on the power play. But, you know, I'm looking at that power play yesterday, and I'm saying, why not put Buff in front of the net?
Sure.
I mean, of course, he's
got... If you need a net front presence...
Yeah.
You know, the Bruins did it years ago with Zdeno Chara, and the Jets have done it before. Claude Noel used to do it years ago, putting Dustin Byfuglien in front of the net. Dustin Byfuglien's shot is one of the hardest in the league, but it's certainly not working this year. So why not try something, you know, against Washington, put him in front of the net? I wasn't at practice today, so, you know, maybe they didn't skate today,
so you don't have to worry about that.
So there you go. So they couldn't have done it if they weren't skating. So why not try something else? Like the Jets...
Well, it's one thing if this was last year or 2 years ago where the Jets really didn't have... anybody with a big shot besides Byfuglien. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Wheeler is not a shooter, like, with a cannon. Scheifele is a different kind of shooter. He's more of a snap-slash-wrist shot guy. So, but the Jets now, with Laine on the roster, have that guy who is teed up for a one-timer and can fire that puck from really anywhere on the ice surface. So, you know, to your point about Byfuglien, maybe you want a net front presence, and I get wanting a net front presence. Well, your best net front presence, probably the best net front presence in the league almost, is on the top of your power play on the blue line right now.
Right, but you have other guys aside from Byfuglien and Laine that can shoot the puck. We've seen Nikolaj Ehlers has a fantastic shot. We've seen Mark Scheifele's got a great wrist shot. So, I mean, there's a lot of talent out there. I think, you know, it comes down to some of it is not getting luck. I mean, they're generating scoring chances out there, guys. It's not like they're not generating scoring chances, and they're getting good zone time. So I think the goals are going to come. But this kind of notion that the Jets haven't had this lack of skill over the years, I think has been completely overblown. I think that, you know, part of it is, you know, the system maybe, and, you know, sometimes they are a little bit too predictable, but, you know, you watch this team and they get chances.
So who would you put as your quarterback to bring the puck up from the defensive zone if Dustin Byfuglien is the guy to go in front of the net?
I don't think that they're necessarily mutually exclusive. I think he could. There's a way to move him down in the zone while getting him to sort of establish the power play at the same time.
I get that, but I think right now, is he more valuable as the quarterback to go retrieve the puck and bring it up, or is he more valuable as to go in front of the net? I would say right now he's better as the guy that can bring it up and quarterback the power play from behind his own net.
You know, I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong answer. I think you're probably more often than not, you're probably correct. But if you're looking to give your team a spark on the power play and you're looking to maybe cause some disruption to your opponent and you're looking maybe to make things a little more difficult, well, Dustin Byfuglien in front of the net is... There's nobody in the league who can handle him, maybe the exception of Zdeno Chara, but the Jets are going to see him once over the next 71 games or 72 games, so you don't have to worry about that. There's no other defenseman who can handle a Dustin Byfuglien in front of the net, and I know we know that Byfuglien prefers defense to forward, and I'm not advocating to making Dustin Byfuglien a forward, but if you tell Dustin Byfuglien, hey, buddy, you get to go be a bleep disturber in front of the opponent's goalie, I think he might have some interest in that.
I think it would work against certain opponents when you know that opponent doesn't have a big enough person to try to handle him in front of the net. Mm-hmm. All right.
No, and you make a good point, Joel, and probably if it's not Dustin Byfuglien bringing the puck up the ice, it's going to be, we've seen Tobias Enstrom out there, and when Tyler Myers is healthy, he's another guy, you know, that would be that one defenseman if you're going to go with 4 forwards and 1 defenseman.
Exactly, which now brings you to 3 forwards, right? Because you're going to want...
Right.
So that's the problem.
Well, I don't know that a guy like Ehlers or a guy like Perreault, who are playmakers, can't also be the guys who quarterback the power play. Or bring the puck up the ice to at least establish it and establish zone time in the opponent's zone. I think there's a lot of there's way more options now for Paul Maurice, and I think he might be overcomplicating things a little bit with Adam Lowry, who, all due respect, is not going to be an offensive dynamo in the NHL at any point in time. So put out your best talent and let your best talent shine through.
And, guys, we're just throwing out ideas here, right? And there isn't going to be one cure-all solution for the Jets' power play, but certainly Patrick Laine has got to be out there. I mean, when you watch the Washington Capitals, Alex Ovechkin sometimes plays the entire 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, as far as I'm concerned, have Laine out there for the entire power play.
Look how many times you've watched the Capitals game and you just see him lurking in the weeds on the left side where he always is. You say, oh, look at Ovechkin, look at him. Oh, boom, it's in the back of the net.
As a fan last night, anytime the Caps were on the power play, and Ovechkin didn't have a great game last night by any stretch, but anytime the Caps were on the power play and they were close to setting him up for that one-timer, you thought the puck was going in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there was one instance, I think it was in the second period, where Hellebuck had to make a very nice save coming cross-crease in order to get the pad on the patented Ovechkin shot from the left side of the goaltender in that instance.
Yeah.
You know, you expect Alex Ovechkin to score power play goals and set him up for that shot because you've seen it for so many years now. The Jets should mimic that. There's no reason not to. There's no reason to. And I know there's a thought process. You don't want to give a rookie too much too soon. The guy's got that much skill. Give him too much too soon.
And he might be 18 years old, but he has 4 power play goals in 9 games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, it just doesn't make any sense. Why would you have your best power play shooter? And again, he is only 18 years old, but he's that good already. So it was really a head scratcher. And it's not necessarily the reason why the Jets lost the game, but it was certainly one of those decisions where you didn't really know where it was coming from. In regards to Paul Maurice's decision-making. So
it's not the reason why, but if you look at their losses so far this season, they're 1 for 27, I guess, on the power play in those games. Some of those losses are one-goal games, so that can swing you the other way. I mean, you never want to slice it and dice it to that point, but when you really break it down in a 10-game segment right now, you have 6 losses. You're 1 for 27 on the power play in those losses. That could swing you into a W instead of an L. And that's just – and then you another 10-game segment. That's what led to them collecting a lot of losses last year. They had the worst power play in the league. They lost a lot of one-goal games when at the end of the game you look 0 for 4, 0 for 3, 0 for 5.
Well, like I said at the start of the segment, they have had the most power play opportunities of any team in the NHL thus far. If you take – and they've scored 5 goals. If you double that – to 20% success rate, which isn't an overwhelming, I mean, it's a good number, but it's not a world, it's not an unreasonable number for a good power play in the NHL. All of a sudden, you got 5 extra goals in or 6 extra goals in the course of your season thus far. What is your record, and how is the game changed for you in the first 10 games if you can double your power play success rate?
And that's where you use the youth to your advantage. You're young, you're small, you're fast. You know, you're going to annoy some of those veteran players. They're going to hook you, they're going to slash you, they're going to cross-check you, you know, because lighter guys, they're going to go flying. That's where you start, you know, drawing penalties and then take an advantage on the power play, and that's how you can start collecting some wins by, you know, using your power plays and just special teams.
When we come back, Chuck Planus of the Macomb Daily joins us to talk about the Detroit Red Wings. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Joel Marcoux. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Chuck Planus. Chuck covers the Detroit Red Wings for the Macomb Daily. Chuck, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Chuck. How about yourself?
Very good.
Excellent. Glad you were able to join us to talk about the Red Wings, the Jets making their only visit to the Motor City this coming Friday evening. You know, the Red Wings so far off to a pretty decent start, I would suggest. 6-4 through their first 10 games of the year. This Red Wings team, you know, everybody expects them to always be in the playoffs. But this year, they're sort of a they're not what you would describe as a favorite in the Eastern Conference, and they're probably a fringe playoff team in order just to get into that first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, how would you assess the Red Wings through the first 10 games of the season so far?
Well, it's been in stages. I mean, those first two games of the year, you thought that this was not going to be a playoff team, and then they roll off that nice win streak, but now they're back in that two-game losing streak where they can't seem to find enough offense. They're getting the goaltending that they need, but it's just that their offense has not really come out like they had hoped it.
Now, Chuck, you mentioned the goaltending, and Peter Mrazek played more games than Jimmy Howard last year, and entering this season, most people, you know, assume that Peter Mrazek would be the number one goaltender, and he has started more games than Jimmy Howard, but Jimmy Howard's numbers are actually better. Are the Wings going to continue to kind of go with a 1A, 1B situation, or is Peter Mrazek going to take the reins and play upwards of 55 or 60 games?
I think you're going to see Peter Mrazek play every game except maybe on nights of back-to-back games. Surprisingly, I mean, like tonight against Philly, I thought maybe Jimmy would get the start with Mrazek being pulled in the last game, but Mrazek's going to get the start. And like you said, Howard's been lights out. I mean, leading the league in goals against and save percentage. And I mean, that's just what the Wings needed. Maybe they can look for trading him possibly down the road. But that's exactly what they needed is to have two good goaltenders with as poor of a defensive unit they've got this year.
It's a small sample size, but what part of this team would you deem worthy of the most scrutiny right now?
I would say their defense, but again, it's a work in progress. We still have Nicholas Cronwell. He's still hurt, but you got like guys like Mike Green, who the Wings admitted that it took him a while to get, you know, acclimated to the Wings system. He started playing better in the second half of last year, and they say he was the best player on the blue line for them in the playoffs. This year, he's been the best blue liner they have. And Jonathan Erickson has taken a lot of heat from fans for how poor he's played, but he's a +3. I mean, he leads the blue liners in the plus-minus rating.
Chuck Plinus is our guest here on NHL This Week. We're discussing the Detroit Red Wings. Chuck covers the team for the Macomb Daily. The Jets and the Red Wings do battle on Friday night, a game, of course, you can hear live on TSN 1290. Chuck, you know, Jeff Blashill, he's into his second year as the Red Wings head coach. Took over last year after Mike Babcock went to Toronto after so many years as the bench boss in Detroit. How have you seen Jeff Blashill change, if at all, from last season when he was a rookie NHL head coach to this year, where, albeit still a young head coach, 10 games in? What changes have you seen in Blashill, if any, so far this season?
Well, I think the biggest change, last year he rode those veteran players, I think, into the ground. I mean, he Zetterberg and Datsyuk play, you know, anywhere up to, you know, 20-plus minutes a night. Now he's scaling back on that. I mean, Zetterberg's had one or two games, I think, this year where he's played 20-plus. I mean, but he's spreading out the lines, minutes, and which is great, which is why, like, the addition of Thomas Vanek, who's on that third line, who's been injured the last few games, with him, Gus Nyquist, and Darren Helm, I mean, they're just leading this team offensively.
Chuck, you mentioned Henrik Zetterberg, who's actually centering the second line as opposed to the first line. Franz Nielsen is centering that first line. Zetterberg doesn't have a goal in 10 games. He's only got 4 assists. Is he off to just a slow start, or is there more concern here?
No, I just think this is what you're going to get from Zetterberg for the rest of his contract. I mean, he's not the same player he was. He had quite a connection with Datsyuk when he was here, but again, you get up in age, and he's got those back issues, and that's, I think, what you're going to see for the rest of his contract.
You know, Zetterberg's getting a little bit older. We often hear about the Detroit way, given its quarter century of regular season success. Is this team becoming a victim of its own success? Not bad enough to tear down, but maybe, and I'll say this without being able to predict the future, of course, not good enough to win at all?
You're right. It's all about making the playoffs, and they just want to make – once they get in, you ride a hot goaltender, which they think Peter Mrazek can do. They can that he can steal a series or two for them and just get a timely goal. I mean, you see that every year. I mean, you get an 8-seed team in there that either makes it to the finals or wins it all, and that's all they want to do is make it to the playoffs and then try and advance as far as they can.
Chuck Plinus, our guest on NHL This Week. Chuck covers the Detroit Red Wings for the Macomb Daily.
No, just sticking with that last thought, is Kenny Holland, is he doing the rebuild on the fly? I mean, is inevitable, is getting those high picks is something that this team will have to do. Is a teardown going to happen at some point, or maybe not on his watch?
It's not going to happen on his watch. And plus, they've got the, you know, the move into the new arena and things like that. No, they're going to try and do it on the fly. I mean, they're kind of doing it this year in a way. I mean, they got the two new young kids on the blue line with Xavier Ouellette and Ryan Sproul, who both have played fairly well for, I mean, they've split the amount of games that they've played. I mean, they're combined plus three and the plus minus. They're getting the young kids. I mean, the Nyquist, the Tatars. I mean, Dylan Larkin's struggling this year, but they're trying to get the young kids in there with the veterans. I mean, the Thomas Vanek signing, I mean, was one of the greatest signings I think they've had in many years. It's a one-year deal. He's got four goals, four assists. I mean, he's playing for another contract is what he's doing, but he's really caught fire so far for them.
You mentioned Thomas Vanek, Chuck, and obviously he's out of the lineup on a week-to-week basis. He's got a lower body injury. How significant of a loss is that for the Red Wings? He has been driving the offense so far, as you mentioned, leading the team in points.
It's a huge loss because, I mean, that line really, like you said, they were the whole thing. I mean, combined, they've got 11 goals and 12 assists between them. You know, other than that, like I said, the Zetterberg has no goals. Tatar's got one goal. Abdelkader's got one goal. Sheehan's got no goals. It's just they need more than one line to produce, and with that one line, that being the only line, it's going to be tough for them to, like I said, make in the playoffs this year.
Chuck, you just mentioned earlier that the Wings are moving to a new arena next year, last year at Joe Louis Arena, and you'd cover the team for some time. Now, what's it like early? What's it been like, I should say, early to cover the team, and what are you going to miss most about the Joe Louis Arena? There's been a lot of great moments in that building.
Yeah, there's been a heck of a lot of great moments. The atmosphere has been unreal so far early in the regular season. That first regular season of the game they had against Ottawa this year, it felt like a playoff atmosphere, and I think they're trying to sell it that way. I mean, the fans are really into it. They're really looking forward to the new arena. But also, it's just there's so much tradition and stuff that has gone on at the show that it's a very loud arena, and the fans, I think, still love it despite it being so old.
Chuck, wanted to ask you about Franz Nielsen. He was the big off-season signing for the Red Wings coming over from the New York Islanders, you know, getting $5.25 million a year up until 2022. What are your impressions of his game? How has he fit in with the Detroit Red Wings thus far?
Steady. I mean, with Pavel Datsyuk, the Wings played more of a slow, down possession game. With Franz Nielsen, I think they're trying to speed it up a bit, especially with their young forwards. I mean, he is a minus five this year, but he's got the two goals and four assists, but they're very happy with what they've seen so far from him. I mean, the only thing, he's 0-for-1 on the shootouts, which is one of the things they signed him for. But they're very happy with him so far this year.
Last question for you, Chuck. Martin Frick, they lost him on waivers. They bring him back on waivers from the Carolina Hurricanes. Is he really in the plans for the Red Wings, or you know, is this a player who's sort of a tweener between the Red Wings and then Grand Rapids of the AHL?
I think he's a tweener. I mean, he's a guy that they didn't want to lose. They kind of knew they were going to lose him. When you got coaches that have coached in the Wings system and they're out there coaching other teams, they know what these players like. I mean, they weren't shocked that Frick got picked up, but I think they're very happy to have him back in the organization.
I lied. One last question. Anthony Mantha is down.
Yeah.
You know, we know that the Red Wings' way of doing business is to always go slow and steady when it comes to their young players. Going on 3 years now since he was drafted 20th overall. When's he going to, you know, make an impact on the Red Wings lineup?
Well, right now he's on fire in Grand Rapids. I mean, he's really scoring a lot of goals. He's doing what the Wings want to see from him. But if he gets called up here, he's got to play a top six role. I mean, I talked off the record with Holland and stuff, and he's not a third or fourth line player. He's got to play those top 6 minutes. He's not a real good defender. But if he gets those top 6 minutes, and if Vanek is out any more length of time than week to week, and they're still struggling to score goals 5-on-5 or whatever, you could probably see Andreas Athanasiou get sent back down and Mantha get back in this lineup.
Chuck Plinus covers the Detroit Red Wings for the Macomb Daily. Chuck, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime, guys.
Take care, Chuck. Head to break. When we come back, we discuss last night's Austin Matthews Connor McDavid matchup. Is it a quote unquote rivalry? You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Peters aside, and Kadri with the steal, in, scores!
Nazem Kadri, the forgotten man in Toronto, stealing the spotlight from Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid, scoring in overtime last night as the Leafs defeated the Oilers by, I believe it was a 3-2 margin, if I'm not mistaken. Welcome back to NHL This Week, a segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Perhaps you're looking for a place to check out Thursday night hockey game or Friday night hockey game or any of the hockey games. Bernstein's Deli, 5 big screen TVs, full audio, delicious deli, Illegal Curve sandwiches, and some cold brewskis.
What's in the Illegal Curve sandwich?
Yeah, come on. Are you serious?
Oh my God, Joel.
You don't know?
No.
Okay.
I'm personally offended right now, Joel.
The Illegal Curve sandwich is, you start with 2 pieces of toasted grilled city rye bread.
Mm-hmm.
You add a little bit of honey mustard on each side of the bread. Then you take some fried onions.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got a chicken schnitzel.
Yes.
Where you melt some cheddar cheese on that chicken schnitzel. I believe it's Bothwell cheddar cheese, the good stuff. And then you add some fried salami on top of it. So you have a chicken schnitzel with melted cheddar cheese, fried salami, fried onions, between 2 pieces of toasted city rye bread.
Mm.
That's what I call the Illegal Curve sandwich.
Joel, how about this? You let me know when you want to go. I'll take you to Bernstein's Deli.
As he's got a VIP table.
And treat you to an Illegal Curve sandwich, because I'm so concerned and shocked that you haven't had one before. I want to take you sometime this week. So let me know.
Yep.
Text me. We'll go.
Person more concerned is Ezzy's cardiologist about Ezzy's consumption of the Illegal Curve
sandwiches. I'm down to like 2 or 3 a week. I was up to about 10, but I've cut back. A lot of kale chips these days, Drew. A lot of fruits and nuts.
That's good to know. I'm thrilled for you that you're eating all that kale nowadays.
Yeah. Speaking of food, though.
Oh, please.
I mean, I think I've eaten the equivalent of 4 Ziploc bags full of Halloween candy. Like at the office, at work, you know, people are just constantly shoving candy in my face.
Okay,
it's ridiculous.
Kind of candy? I mean, chocolate bars, Rockets, the suckers. What are we talking? Like, where are we going here?
A lot of Reese's Pieces, a lot of Wonder Bar.
Fun Dip?
No Fun Dip.
I
do like Fun Dip, though.
You're spending a lot of time with your lady friend and spending a lot of time at your lady friend's residence.
That's where the Fun Dip comes into play.
And I'm well aware that there's not a lot of kids that would be trick-or-treating in that neighborhood, because it's my neighborhood as well.
I own a house, and that's where I gave out my candy.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. Because I was wondering, because I know that we bought, my wife and I bought a 30-pack of candy. And had all of one child show up at our door.
One child. Well,
we had set the over-under at 6 children.
Well, the weather was awful.
Weather was awful. I took the over. Laura took the under. We had one child show up to... I gave her some extra candy because, 30 pieces of candy, one child. The math didn't really work out very well.
Yeah.
So I'm saying I got a lot of candy left over right now.
What are you doing with it?
I took it to the office.
Yeah.
I'm hoping the people at the office, the scavengers there, will devour it, because if it's in my house, it's going to be a real problem.
Apparently one of the reasons why there are less kids these days is because a lot of kids go to the mall, which is something that back in my day
never occurred.
We didn't do. We just went from house to house.
You had to grind it.
It's called Safe Halloween or something? No. Yeah. You got to fight through the elements.
Pillowcase, grind it.
That's why I would always do pillowcase.
And in our day, there was likely snow on the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember, you'd have to dress up. You'd have to somehow get your costume over top of your parka.
Well, Drew, I don't know if we have, the meteorological records from the 1940s, but we'll maybe have to check on that.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. That was an age joke, Joel, in case you missed it.
Yeah.
It's something that happens frequently on this show, even though I'm all of, I believe, 1 year older than Ezzy. There's a frequency.
I think less than a year. I think you're 11 months older.
Yeah, well, whatever it might be. There's plenty of age joke. There's ageism on the show. It's really quite upsetting if you really
Speaking of age, let's get to the young guns.
The young guns. Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews, they did battle last night, and of course all the hype around it was through the roof, just as we saw when Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine did battle a couple weeks ago. Bobby Orr was in attendance at Air Canada Center.
By the way, I think Rory just cracked open a chocolate bar over there.
Gretzky was in attendance. Yeah, Rory definitely has a grin on his face. He definitely did crack open a chocolate bar.
Yep.
Wayne Gretzky was in attendance. Was this more than a game?
Yes.
Between two very good young players?
Well, first of all, it was two Canadian teams that aren't in the same conference. And yes, it was the first game in the NHL between Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid. You mentioned Gretz was there. He said he was specifically in Toronto, even though he obviously has the restaurant in Toronto and he's frequently in Toronto. But, he can choose to be in California, which is probably where I would be if I was him,
yep.
or in Edmonton, which
sure.
he's now part of the Oilers Entertainment Group. So, I mean, let's be honest, Drew. This isn't Crosby versus Ovechkin yet. I think it can get there.
How can it get there, Izzy? Let me interrupt you. They play twice a year.
Well,
how can it possibly ever get there?
And also,
I'll tell you why. If you let me finish.
No, I don't want to let you finish. Joel, go on.
No, I was going to say the Crosby and Ovechkin one also had a layer to it before they entered the NHL.
Yes.
From, you know, going back to the World Junior in Grand Forks when they played each other and Canada snapped that drought, and you see Ovechkin crying on the bench. They both get drafted first overall. Lockout happens, so their first year ends up happening at the exact same time. So there's that built-in rivalry with these two guys. I mean, it's a manufactured rivalry more than anything.
Well, first of all, I think you can have the Canada versus USA rivalry at the senior level, one. And two, I think you're going to see these two guys fighting for the Art Ross Trophy for many years to come. So I think you might not have the head-to-head rivalry like you do because Pittsburgh and Washington are in the same conference, Drew.
Right.
And certainly you're not going to see them play in the playoffs in the first or second round like Crosby and Ovechkin have.
Unless they play in the Stanley Cup Final, that's the only time you're going to see these two guys play meaningful games against
one
another.
They're fellow North Americans, too. Let's not forget.
My answer to that, well, and I have more. Do you want more?
Sure, why the hell not?
Gretzky and Lemieux didn't play in the same conference, and they had a rivalry, didn't they?
I don't know if there was really a rivalry or if it's just more.
It was just
benchmarks.
Come on, guys. I think
the rivalry was who was the best player in the world.
I think they had benchmarks versus one another where they would, you know, where, I mean, Gretzky came on the scene first and he was doing all of his fantastic, you know, scoring records and everything else. Then Lemieux came in and the torch was passed from Gretzky to Lemieux in some regards in that they were never really. I don't know that Gretzky was at his peak really when Lemieux was at his peak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, a bit of the difference, whereas Crosby and Ovechkin have been at their peak at the same time.
Yeah. And the thing is that the Gretzky one, when he held court yesterday at the ACC before that game, he said it wasn't necessarily a rivalry. It was just more so that when you played that team that had that guy, it just kind of fired you up a little bit. All right, I want to show this guy what I've got. You know, same thing happened to him when he entered the league and Guy Lafleur was saying, all right, let's see what this kid's got. And that kind of – it brings a little bit of an – inner competition, but I don't think it's a rivalry that dates back. I mean, Matthews and McDavid were teammates on Team North America about a month ago.
Well, let's not get into that. That was ridiculous. They should have been on Team Canada and Team USA.
Sure.
But I agree with you, Joel. Maybe rivalry is too strong of a word for what Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews are at this point. And at the end of the day, guys, we could call it a rivalry or not. I would call it a rivalry, not in maybe the same sense as Crosby and Ovechkin is, but certainly it's just excellent for hockey.
Yeah.
To have two young players, 18 and 19 years old, coming into the league, Connor McDavid is right at the top of the list of the top scorers in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Austin Matthews has cooled down a little bit. I don't think he has a point in his last four games, but certainly four goals in his first ever NHL game. It's great competition. Let's say that.
I think they'll use one another as benchmarks. I think that Austin Matthews. I think Connor McDavid is the better of the two players, and I think that you know Austin Matthews will look at Connor McDavid and say
they're different players.
Yeah. They're certainly different players. But I think that Matthews will to some extent will look at McDavid and say okay that's what that guy's doing. That's something I want to achieve in my career.
Right.
That's a benchmark I want to be able to improve upon. Here's my
Can we call it healthy competition, then?
Certainly, healthy competition.
Go, sure.
I would totally agree with healthy competition. I'd like to point out one thing. Austin Matthews versus Connor McDavid, it's going to attract the attention of the casual hockey fan.
Mm-hmm.
It was completely asinine, completely and totally asinine, that game wasn't available both in Canada and in the United States on national TV. That was a regional broadcast only. And if the NHL truly wants to build an audience with, showcasing their young superstars.
Flex it.
Put it on a platform where everyone, casual hockey fans who might stumble by it.
Well, if you had Game Center, first of all, Drew, you could watch it.
Yes, but not everybody has Game Center, and you shouldn't make people have to work in order to get that game.
Yeah,
you're trying to promote your best players.
Sure. I don't disagree with you.
It just doesn't make any sense from a marketing standpoint how the NHL can see a. It's like if the NFL would put a Tom Brady. When Tom Brady and Peyton Manning played each other.
Yeah, Sunday morning.
It would be like the game in London or something.
Yeah.
It was always a primetime Sunday night game or at the very least a late window afternoon game. It was never a 12 noon start. The NHL. For whatever reason, and it boggles my mind, and I've complained about this going on for a number of years now, refuses to showcase players. They only showcase cities as part of a rivalry. Like, you know, tonight, it's Wednesday night rivalry on NBC Sports Network.
Yeah.
Detroit versus Philadelphia. Well, unless Eric Lindros has come back to play, and this is the, you know, the Stanley Cup Finals in, what was the year, was that, 97?
Sure.
All over again. There's no way that Detroit and Philadelphia in anybody's minds are actual rivals.
2000 is when he's got rocked by Stevens.
Okay. Well, yeah. But, I mean, there's no rivalry there.
Yeah.
So you can't say that's a Wednesday night rivalry game just because it's two cities vaguely close to each other on the somewhat of the eastern seaboard, but even Detroit's nowhere near the eastern seaboard.
By the way, Joel, I hope the Cubbies are as fired up as Drew is right now, because if they're as fired up as Drew, they're winning
sense.
The World Series tonight.
It just doesn't make any sense. Promote your best players. Promote your most interesting players. Don't promote cities that have absolutely no connection to one another.
Drew, I wish our listeners could see you shaking your fist right now, because it's pretty funny.
Well, I mean, it's...
I like it.
It's a
I like
constant
it. This is good.
Complaint. I, you know, and no one's been able to... you know, I'm not a marketing wizard, and I don't pretend to be a marketing wizard, but the NFL showcases their best players. Mm-hmm. And they don't give a damn where those best players are playing. Okay. If they're playing in Seattle, if they're playing in Indianapolis, if they're playing in Green Bay, if they're playing in Chicago, if they're playing in Minnesota, if they're playing in Tennessee, they're going to showcase their best players and their most interesting players and their most interesting storylines. Why the NHL thinks that they need to reinvent the wheel and not showcase their best players and instead showcase cities doesn't make a lick of sense to me whatsoever.
Do you think they should be able to flex on the fly? If there's, let's say, the Leafs and Oilers are playing each other at noon on a Saturday, should they be able to just all of a sudden flip it to prime time?
I don't think that they need to flex. I think when you have McDavid and Matthews, and you know they're only playing twice a year, you put that game on a national TV audience.
Sure. Yeah.
It's not like that you need to change your schedule very dramatically. You know these guys are the first time they're ever going to play each other.
Mm-hmm.
You put that for as many people to see.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense to do it any other way. I complained about this last season when McDavid played his first game. Connor McDavid, the next big young superstar in the NHL, started his season on a whatever night it was, a Thursday night playing in St. Louis on a random game.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that. You put Connor McDavid on a primetime audience against, you know, a huge market.
Yeah.
And so you can sell the game. That's how you sell the game.
And Drew, I don't think you're going to get any arguments from Joel or I. And as you mentioned, the Oilers and the Leafs play once more, so you have one more opportunity this season to get it right.
Well, and I'm sure that game's probably been playing on a Sunday afternoon head-to-head against the Super Bowl or something.
Regardless, if it's on the Super Bowl, then the NHL is screwed. But, yeah. I mean, if it's any other day, the NHL should have that game available to a national audience in both Canada and the U.S. I agree.
Well, I'm glad that we agree. Let's go to break. We're going to bring in Michael Landsberg from our sister station, TSN 1050. He's coming to Winnipeg tomorrow night for a great event in the community. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Joel Marcoux with you here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Just as an update, a follow-up to my rant in the previous segment, the Oilers and the Leafs, of course, meet one more time this year. It is Tuesday, November the 29th. It is also not a national TV broadcast in Canada. Or the United States.
That just doesn't make any sense, like you said last segment. I mean, that game has to be broadcast nationally.
Nothing about that makes any sense. I mean, you can't overemphasize about how silly that decision
is. Maybe they'll switch it. Flex it in.
Maybe. I mean, that would require the NHL to do something clever. Just want to point out that Dexter Fowler, leadoff batter for the Chicago Cubs, just hit a leadoff home run.
Wow.
Four pitches into the game, the Cubbies lead the Cleveland Indians by a 1-0 margin. And if you think that the Cleveland franchise was a little nervous about potentially blowing a 3-1 lead prior to the start of the game, well, Dexter Fowler, not known as a home run hitter generally, just launched a ball over the fence to take a 1-0 lead over the Cleveland Indians in Game 7.
Who would you like to see?
I think the Cubs were the best team in baseball all season,
yeah.
So I have no problem with... I think the Cubs probably are the better of the two teams.
Sure.
That being said, you know, what the Indians did during the playoffs was very impressive, so I think that they were just as deserving to get to this point in time.
Almost like out of the Royals' book of last year.
Yeah, both teams. You know, the Indians, you just... What Andrew Miller has done has just been fantastic, and of course the Cubs with Aroldis Chapman, two guys you just can't hit.
Yeah,
I mean it really is incredible. Trying to get.
Well,
Michael...
I think Joel wanted to know who I was cheering for
sure,
as well.
You
Drew,
can give you an answer here. I'm going to try and text Michael Landsberg. Because we're trying to have a little difficulty getting him on the air right now.
You should try FaceTiming him.
Okay, I don't have an iPhone. Though.
You know, Joel, I'm with Drew. I'm pulling for the Cubbies. I mean, I'm a Jays fan. I'm wearing a Jays cap right now, but the Chicago Cubs. I mean, what else can you say? They're coming back from down 3-1 in the World Series. They haven't won a World Series championship in 108 years. As Drew mentioned, they were the best team in baseball this year. And, you know, I love the city of Chicago. Nothing against the city of Cleveland, but I'm pulling for the Chicago Cubs. I think they're long, yeah. long overdue. So they're up 1-0, and we'll see if they can keep it up here. But certainly there's 15,000 Cubs fans in attendance in Cleveland here that are super pumped up that they've taken the early 1-0 lead.
And Theo's fingertips have certainly poured the foundation to what could be some sustainable success. They're young and they're good, and of course with Joe Maddon there, you're always going to be competitive in terms of the, in the way he can use his wizardry.
Well, and that's sort of what I like to see is that this isn't a World Series that I don't consider that either team is going to lose this World Series because all the decisions by the coaches, by the managers, have been the right decisions.
Yeah.
This isn't Buck Showalter not using. Not using Chris Tillman
yeah.
Is that his name, Chris Tillman? Did I get that right? No, it's who was it in the reliever?
Oh,
it's not Chris Tillman's the starting
their closer
for Baltimore.
Yeah.
I can't,
Mariano Rivera?
No, it's on the tip of my tongue, but I'll have to look at
what year.
Just this past year, where he didn't go to his closer
oh,
that was lights out in the wild card game, and the Jays finally, we went to Ubaldo Jimenez instead, and he finally came
Zach
back
Britton.
To bite him. Zach Britton. Thank you, Joel. I knew we brought you here for
you
a good reason.
You should have known that, Drew. Your dog's name is Brixton.
It's
Britton,
true.
Brixton
and Brixton, very similar. Yeah. All seasons long, I confused, for whatever reason, I confused Tillman and Britton,
yeah.
Which I don't know why. I mean, maybe they both sort of sound the same.
Didn't you tweet about it? I remember you were tweeting about it.
I tweet about lots of things.
Yeah, it was annoying.
Well, I guess we'll see what kind of a decision it was yesterday using Aroldis Chapman for all those pitches, but I guess they've got the early lead right now, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we're still trying to get a hold of Michael Landsberg, so if we are able to get him on. He's coming to town as part of an event. You know, we know how committed he is to mental health causes and the Bell mm-hmm. Let's Talk promotion and everything else. He's coming to town on behalf of Jewish Child and Family Services. It's going to be tomorrow evening at the Sherazetic Synagogue, open to everybody, of course. The subject is Darkness and Hope. Depression, Sports, and Me. Michael Landsberg is going to speak about his struggles with depression and how he's been sort of at the forefront of the movement for mental health, for men's mental health. And so he's coming to town. We wanted to speak to him about the event tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. at the Sherazetic Synagogue. Tickets available online, jcfswinnipeg.org, or you can just Google Michael Landsberg and Jewish Child and Family Services. Open to the entire public, so we do recommend. It's going to be a very interesting night to hear Michael Landsberg speaking so passionately about a subject that he's so passionate about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you make a lot of good points. Michael Landsberg has been a great advocate for mental health, and specifically in hockey. You know, unfortunately, he lost a friend of his, Wade Bielak, 5 years ago, and it's going to be interesting to speak with him. We've spoken with him before on other shows, but never had him on a Legal Curve, so hopefully we get a hold of him here.
Yeah, we're going to try and get him on, and if we're not able to, we'll just keep talking about hockey instead. How's that sound as a reasonable alternative for the Michael Landsberg interview? We haven't really spoken about the Red Wings as the Jets' opponent coming up on Friday. It'll be, the second half of that back-to-back, just like last week, where they played Thursday and then they had to travel and play Friday. The Red Wings are, from what I can see, they're a team that'll probably be a little bit vulnerable as the Jets enter there. They don't have a dynamic offense. They are without Thomas Vanek, and whatever you think about Thomas Vanek, and he's certainly been streaky throughout his career. When he is hot,
he's
one of the best players in the league. The problem has been his inconsistency.
Yeah.
So I think the Jets are sort of catching the Red Wings at a decent time. The question is, I'm quite frightened about the Jets going into Washington, not having last change, not being able to get any defensive matchups that you want, given how thin they are on the back end right now, that I think the Capitals might be able to do some serious damage. The Caps won last night. They weren't the better of the two teams. I have trouble believing you're going to see them be as listless as they were last night at home on Thursday night.
That's exactly it. Not to mention the fact that, like you say, a back-to-back for the Jets, not exactly their strong suit. They are perfect in their back-to-back this year, of course, with the Stars and Avalanche, blanking the Avalanche in Colorado last week, which is an impressive effort. I think the Red Wings this year, not only are they vulnerable when the Jets face them this week, I think this 25-year playoff, you know, I guess whatever you want to call it, this run.
Yeah, the streak of the playoffs, sir.
I think they're a couple of injuries away from maybe having that evaporate quite quickly. Not quickly as the season progresses, but this team right now, are they built to make a run? Not unless some guys really pick it up. And like you say, Thomas Vanek, he's the guy that can put the puck in the net. Zetterberg, getting a little bit older. Mm-hmm. Larkin right now, little bit of a sophomore slump, if you want to call it that. They're back in right now. They're kind of playing musical chairs with all of their pairings. A couple of minuses back there, if you care about that stat or not. So it's a work in progress. This team, while their record isn't too bad right now, they may start, you know, fluttering a little bit.
I don't believe that they are necessarily... I mean, they're 6-4 right now. I'm not sure that they are... I mean, which isn't world-beating by any stretch of the imagination.
It's small sample size. Right?
Yeah, I'm not sure that they are a playoff team. I didn't have them in the playoffs entering this season. I thought this was going to be the year that the streak finally ended.
I think this is the first year I actually didn't pick the Detroit Red Wings to make the playoffs. And as you just mentioned, Joel, they've made the playoffs for 25 straight years. But, you know, the Jets can't really overlook the Detroit Red Wings here. You've lost to the Washington Capitals. You've got them again tomorrow night in Washington. But the Jets have three back-to-back games on the road here, guys, in November. You've got 16 total games. They've played one. You've got 10 road games. So, I mean, this is going to be a very difficult stretch here for the Jets. They've already lost to the Sabres and the Capitals at home. But certainly, I agree with what you're saying about the Red Wings, Joel. Henrik Zetterberg hasn't scored a goal yet this year. You know, we just talked to Chuck about it, and, you know, he's missing Pavel Datsyuk, but as you mentioned, he's just not as young as he once was. He's not effective as he once was. And when you have a guy like Thomas Vanek, who was signed to a one-year contract, and he was your top scorer, but now he's out of the lineup, and you're struggling to find offense, even though they weren't against the Florida Panthers last game. They won 5-2, but certainly, you know, guys like, whether it's a guy like Thomas Tatar or a Gustav Nyquist or a Riley Sheahan, I mean, these guys haven't taken that next step. They're good players, but they need to replace that offense that they're missing from a Pavel Datsyuk. They've really missed guys. Nicholas Cronwall, by the way. Nicholas Cronwall has been a rock back there on defense for the Detroit Red Wings. And sure, Mike Green has done a nice job coming in there providing offense, but, you know, a guy like Danny DeKeyser, he struggled a little bit playing top pair. Guys like Jonathan Erickson, Brendan Smith, Xavier Ouellette, these are good defensemen. Yep. But you know, in that Eastern Conference, you know, there's a lot of elite teams there. So you know, the Red Wings, you know, they might prove us wrong and get into the playoffs for the 26th straight year. But certainly, you know, right now they're not as intimidating of a team as they might have been, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay, so let's say, and cart way before the horse here. Let's say they're on the road to not making the postseason, and we touched earlier in the previous segment when we talked about the Wings, about rebuilding on the fly, which is kind of what they're doing. They've never really, obviously they're always in the playoffs, so they don't have the ability to draft high. They haven't drafted top 10 since 1991. Let's say they're on the road to missing the playoffs. Ezzy, Drew, do you guys maybe swap a couple of pieces at the deadline? Vanek on a one-year deal to try to maybe sink yourself a little bit, maybe get a higher draft pick, and then next year you're back to where you want to be without necessarily tearing it down.
I think if you're not going to be a playoff team, you know, if you're the Red Wings and you're not going to be a playoff team, then I think you certainly, you know, swap all your assets that you can at the trade deadline.
Well, I certainly think it's not a ridiculous thing to bring up, Joel, because, you know, you have Dylan Larkin, who is in his second year in the NHL. He's only 19 years old. You have a guy like Anthony Mantha. You have an Evgeny Svechnikov, who was a late first-rounder. As you mentioned, the Red Wings haven't had too many top 10 draft picks because they've always been in the playoffs. But certainly, you know, if it gets to a situation where you know you're going to miss the playoffs, you might move some of those veteran pieces to get a higher draft pick.
Yeah.
Michael Landsberg's on the line. We'll go to break and we'll bring him in on the other side. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
In the evening. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Joel Marcoux with you here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program our colleague with TSN 1050 in Toronto, Michael Landsberg. Michael is coming to Winnipeg tomorrow evening as part of an event put on by the Jewish Child and Family Service. The event, or Michael's going to be speaking on darkness and hope, depression, sports, and me. Michael, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Well, I would say thank you for having me.
Well, we appreciate that. Michael, we're going to talk about the event coming up tomorrow evening, of course, here in Winnipeg. But before we do that, on behalf of my family and on behalf of Ezra's family, we need to apologize to you.
Okay, I'm intrigued by why, but fire away.
Well, the reason we need to apologize to you is that both Ezra and I have a cousin named Matthew Leibel, and you might be familiar with Matthew as he was a former broadcaster.
I see, yes. Okay. You know, I was starting to feel like there was a connection, and it's a Jewish instinctive thing, right?
It is. And so, you know, we know that you were a regular guest on the Big Show with Matt and with Troy for, you know, many months and many years. So, you know, on behalf of my family, on behalf of Ezra's family, we'd like to apologize for, you know, whatever Matthew Leibel put you through all those different times you appeared on the program.
Well, I'm sure whatever he put me through will not be nearly as bad as he puts his congregation through.
That's very true. Unfortunately, I'm a congregant at that synagogue, and apparently it's rude on Yom Kippur to heckle the rabbi. I mean, I had no idea about that.
You know, it depends. If you do it mid-afternoon when... Is this the synagogue that I'll be speaking at tomorrow?
This is Sherazadic Synagogue. That's right.
Okay. Okay. And does Leibel have some relative importance? He's kind of in training, right?
Yeah, he's a rabbi in training. I would never, when he's a full rabbi, even when he's got tenure, I'm never going to actually say he has any importance. He's always going to be my little cousin, and that's never going to change.
Right. And just to confirm this, basically he's a rabbi intern.
Yeah, that's a fair way of putting it, yeah.
Okay. I'm filed away. He just messaged me, actually, and said, hey, am I, are we going to hang out tomorrow? So, any suggestions for me?
Block that number would be my first suggestion. But anyways, Michael, we appreciate you joining us this evening. We know you have to be up early tomorrow morning to host with Dave Naylor. And before we get talking about the event, and we know it's a cause that's near and dear to your heart, we were talking a couple segments ago about Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid last night at Air Canada Center. And we were sort of debating, you know, is it, quote-unquote, a rivalry from your perspective, or are these just two players who are going to be using one another as benchmarks throughout their career?
Well, first of all, you know, because they're in different conferences, you know, if you were to hypothetically have a rivalry like Ovechkin and Crosby had, it's pretty hard to maintain it. You know, I think, to be honest with you, it's 100% media manufactured. This is just made for TV, made by guys like me and the two of you who do talk radio, who need to search for things to say, right? Like, I fully admit it. There's times when you go, okay, well, we need a story. We got to think of something. There's got to be an angle. Oh, my gosh, it's McDavid and Austin Matthews, the two first draft choices from the past couple of years. Wow, I bet you they got a great rivalry. One's Canadian, one's American, you know, like, but that's really irrelevant to both of those guys. So I would say definitely man-made.
You know, Michael, before I ask you a question, I want to get a little bit serious on you here. I've never met you in person, but you're someone that I always looked up to, you know, wanting to be a sports broadcaster. You were on TSN Off the Record for many years and now on TSN 1050. But, you know, I got to give you the utmost props for someone like myself who deals with depression, who lost his mom to depression. You have been, you know, a big role model for me, and you've done, you know, many really good things as far as raising awareness for mental illness and speaking about your own depression. So before I ask you the question, I just wanted to say thank you, you know, because your strength has really been, you know, very impressive to me. And I think that, you know, a lot of people think the same way. So I just wanted to say that, first of all.
Well, I just want to say thank you. Typically, I come back with a smart-ass remark, but clearly it's not appropriate at this time. I'm sorry about your mom. I didn't know that. How long ago did she pass away?
I was 6 years old at the time.
Right. And how old are you now?
34.
Right. And do you remember that day? I mean, six is young.
I do. Right. Yeah, it was the worst day of my life.
I'm sure. And because, you see, unfortunately, mental illness has a voice, especially depression. Did she suffer from depression?
She did, yeah.
Yeah. Depression has a voice. You know, it talks to us, and it convinces us of things that are so absurd to the healthy brain. And one of the things I try to do with people who are really struggling, who are on the edge, is tell them whatever you're thinking is not what you're thinking. It's the illness talking to you. And it's possible that parents can believe that their kids would be better off without them, even though that's the most absurd thing for anyone to conceive of. But the illness has a voice. And I know that voice. I know that voice really well. Now, it never told me to end my life, but it tells me, you know, as recently as this afternoon, that, you know, you're not good. You have no place in this. You know, when you're going to Winnipeg to speak, what do you have to offer them? So it's just this really unusual illness that, you know, we talk about schizophrenia like and psychosis, like people hearing voices. Depression is a voice, but it's your own voice talking to you, and it knows all of your insecurities and all of the places that you're vulnerable, and it feeds them back to you. So I'm really sorry about your mom.
No, I appreciate that, but I think you definitely do deserve to be praised, because I think you have, you know, it takes a lot of strength and courage to talk about it. So I am going to get to my question, though. Since 2011, as you know, when several NHL players lost their lives, do you think that the NHL and the NHLPA has done a good job since then raising the awareness and helping players who may be dealing with mental health issues?
You know, I would say that they have done as well as they can do. And I'm kind of the first guy. Like, if you were to ask me where I stand on most issues, I would be union as opposed to ownership. I'd be worker instead of management. That's just the way I look at it. You know, in most player disputes or disputes in sports, whether it's a strike or a lockout, I tend to side with the players. But, you know, in this case, I really think the NHL has tried to do what they can through conventional means. They have a great program that's set up for people. Rick Rippon was in the program. Now, it's ironic that I would say it's a great program, given the fact that he passed away. But I believe that, from what I was told from friends of his and family, that he got really good care. That, you know, not everyone can be saved. I think the NHL has done a good job. I think that what it's really a matter of is the individual teams in the locker room making the discussion of mental illness not taboo, so a player can actually say, you know what, coach, I need to talk to you. Or better still, I'm going to say it in front of my buddies because these guys understand me. That's what they have to strive for. And that's not easy to do. You know, it's easy to put a program in place where you say, okay, well, if you have a problem, you come to the team and they'll give you access to this great treatment. But what's really difficult is creating an atmosphere in the locker room where someone feels like they can stand up and say, you know what, I think I've got an illness, I need some help. And I think they've made some progress, but still a long way. Now, you mentioned those players in the summer of 2011. Wade Bielak was one of my best friends. And he talked to me about his illness. We talked 2 weeks before. He had breakfast at my kitchen table. And I knew that he was sick. I knew that he was struggling. I knew that he was on medication. But he didn't feel like he could come out and share it with his team because he was a borderline player. He was a guy that if you gave a general manager a reason to pick between two guys, he picked the guy without the mental illness. So I think there's work to be done. I think the NHL and the Players Association has done as good a job as they can do.
Michael Landsberg is our guest on NHL This Week with the Legal Curve Hockey. We're discussing an event coming up tomorrow evening, Darkness and Hope, Depression, Sports, and Me. It's put on by Jewish Child and Family Services. It's going to be tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. at Sharizetic Synagogue. Tickets available, jcfswinnipeg.org.
Michael, when you started your program, it was, of course, not only to encourage people to share their stories, but also, and just as importantly, to try to curtail the mindset that some have, that it's a weakness, not an illness. Is that gulf between the two getting smaller? And as a society, are we underachieving at accepting this right now?
You know, that's a difficult question for me to answer because, you know, to one extent, you're asking me to kind of size up this massive problem that exists. My gut tells me it's gotten a bit better, but I still talk to people every day. I mean, literally every day, who are in the closet, who I may be the only person they've ever shared with, and they don't even know me. So I think it's still a huge issue. I still think that the stigma exists all over, and it's most damaging when the person who's suffering believes the stigma, because that's quite the cross to bear, to walk around with, believing that somehow this illness that has robbed you of the happiness in your life is actually your fault. So you have this guilt and this shame and this embarrassment. So it complicates it. And in fact, in a lot of ways, it keeps people in the closet. So, yeah, I think we're doing a bit better.
Last year around Bell Let's Talk Day, you were in the process of launching a program looking for ambassadors for mental health awareness across coast to coast. How's the program going?
Yeah, the program's gone pretty well. I mean, Sick Not Weak is the name of the enterprise. It's a not-for-profit. We've applied for charitable status. We have a website, sicknotweak.com. So I'll be really honest with you from the standpoint that, you know, I'm not a guy who typically will BS you. People in business, especially, everything's almost always great, right? You know, you talk to a guy who owns a restaurant, oh, it's great, and then the next day they close. So here's what we've done really well. We've done a really good job of making people more comfortable with their illness, of allowing them to come out and share. So we have saved lives, and we have changed lives, without a doubt. But I'm disappointed, in particular in myself, that we haven't changed more lives and saved more lives. Because the big thing here is that this is a business. And while I have made my living almost exclusively from doing what I'm doing now, talking, that does not necessarily make you a great CEO for a company. And that's what it is. I mean, there's been a couple of people that have helped me. We have volunteers all across the country. The truth is I have failed to engage them and find a way to use them. So we're sitting on this gold mine of help. We're sitting on this thing that can change so many lives. But now the challenge is for me to figure out how to do that. So it's gone well, because I know that there's a person alive today in Winnipeg that wouldn't be alive, but not nearly as well as it can go and as it will go.
Michael, the event is tomorrow night. It's at 7 p.m. at the Sharizetic Synagogue here in Winnipeg. What can people expect when you get up and you speak to the assembled audience?
Well, what they can expect is the range of emotions that I think that you wouldn't normally get from this kind of speech. You know, it's like I say, sometimes when I come out and there's a really good crowd, it's like, man, why the hell are you people here? Who shows up to an event where, you know, it's really based around a guy who's going to talk about his own mental illness? So my goal is to make people understand the illness better, to make them understand the people that they love who suffer from the illness, and to be me, and to be, you know, the smart-ass Landsberg, and to poke fun at myself. I mean, I have full license to poke fun at mental illness, because I am a sufferer, just like I have full license to poke fun at Jews because I'm a Jew. It's right. Like you guys can make Jewish jokes.
Right? And we do on a weekly basis, we do on the show.
But you see, that gives me the license to go almost anywhere with this. Like if I was hosting an event for the Canadian Cancer Society and I was making cancer jokes, you would go, oh my God, that's disgusting. But I can get up there and I can poke fun at myself, and I can help to take the dialogue away from this whispered, very serious business that clearly people have tuned out for 100 years, and try to make it just a little bit more engaging, just a little bit more interesting. So what will they get? Assuming that I feel good, because, I mean, don't forget, at my core, when it comes to this, I'm still a guy that suffers from depression. When I feel good, they'll laugh and they'll feel like they understand the illness better. And if I feel crappy, they'll just understand like they... or they'll just feel like they understand the illness better. So I'm going to say that if they come out and you don't at least smile and have some fun, come up to me afterwards and I'll give you a refund.
The subject matter is darkness and hope, depression, sports, and me. Michael Landsberg will be speaking tomorrow evening at Sharizetic Synagogue at 7 p.m. Tickets available, jcfswinnipeg.org. We encourage all our listeners to attend this very important event. Michael, really appreciate your time this evening. As always, we appreciate your honesty in speaking about your struggle and your battle with depression. And we wish you all the best. Good luck flying here to Winnipeg tomorrow, and we'll see you in the audience tomorrow.
Are you going to be there?
I'm going to try and make it. It depends
on...
Okay,
I'll take that as a no, because you have to understand, I'm a guy who's lied through his teeth many times on interviews when people have asked me if I'm going to be there. So you're not going to be there. Either one of you guys, any chance you're going
to
be there?
Michael, the problem is I'm actually on air. I'm doing the pre- and post-game for the Jets game, so I'd love to meet you and shake your hand and make fun of Libel with you in person, but I'm on air, so I can't come.
Yeah, well, last time I checked, pre-game is before the game, post-game is after the game. There's about 3 hours in between. So, you know what?
Well, yeah, there you go. Hold his feet to the fire there, Michael. We like to do that here on the station all the
Thanks
time
for the
as
chance
well.
To talk to you guys. Pleasure to meet you, by the way.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks.
Take care of yourself. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You've been disappointed with even strength play? I mean, how would you assess it through the first?
I'm always pretty honest. You know, first game I thought it was good. The second game I liked the way we played. I didn't like the result tonight. I hated the way we played.
Nashville Predators head coach Peter Laviolette not happy with his team's performance. And for good reason. A chic Stanley Cup playoff pick. Or Stanley Cup champion pick, rather. A Western Conference champion pick. The Predators are off to a very slow 3-5-1 record through the first 9 games of the season. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their new location, 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Gentlemen, Ezzy, Joel, you guys came prepared with some teams that are just teams and players that are both disappointments and surprises, impressive so far this early into the NHL season. Ezzy, one of those teams that jumped out to you was the Nashville Predators.
Well, yeah, we gave it away a little bit there, guys, mm-hmm. but you know, for me, the most disappointing team in the entire NHL has to be the Nashville Predators. And we should mention, again, that it is early, but after 9 games, the Nashville Predators are second last in the Western Conference. You mentioned it, Drew. They've got a record of 3-5-1. They did beat the Colorado Avalanche last night 5-1, but the Colorado Avalanche are nothing to write home about, in my opinion. They're still a team that I think is has an outside shot of making the playoffs. But you look at the Nashville Predators, and to me what's the most concerning is nobody's scoring goals that you would expect to score goals. They've actually scored 24 goals in 9 games, which is, you know, kind of puts them right around the middle to, you know, second, third of the league. And they actually have
24 goals puts them at a 11th from the bottom, so that they've
right.
scored, so I guess that would be 19th.
Right, so call it middle of the pack or a little bit.
Right. 21st in goals.
Minus
four.
5
right.
goals differential, too.
Right, so, you know, right. that maybe you'd say that, okay, well, that's not that bad. But when you look at Philip Forsberg does not have a goal. He leads the team with 7 assists. But then you look at guys like James Neal and Ryan Johansson, they have a combined 2 goals, 1 goal each in 9 games. That's $9 million in salary right there. So when you're talking about the Nashville Predators, sure, everybody knows that P.K. Subban has come in there, and everybody mm-hmm. expects a lot out of P.K. Subban, myself included. You know, from all accounts, he's actually been pretty good. You know, the guys that are getting paid the big bucks are not scoring. They've got the second-best power play in the NHL right now mm-hmm. at 33%, second-worst P.K. at 71%, but certainly after 9 games, only having 3 wins, and all of these high-paid guys, top 6 forwards that aren't putting the puck in the net, I think, to me, it's the most disappointing team so far. They can still turn it around here, Drew.
I was going to say, doesn't that tell you, because, I mean, Philip Forsberg's not going to, you know, he's going to start getting his goals.
Mm-hmm.
And
they expect 30 goals out of Philip Forsberg.
And Ryan Johansson's going to get his goals. And, you know, maybe they don't get 30 anymore, but they probably still could. So doesn't that sort of give you a little bit of confidence that, yeah, they've been disappointing, but they're getting secondary.
But hold on, what do you mean anymore? Ryan Johansson's 24 years old. So, I mean, I think that they expect the best is yet to come Ryan Johansson.
I apologize if I gave you the impression that I didn't think that was the case. Ryan Johansson is their best forward, in my opinion. Or him or Forsberg, but Johansson, since he's been in Nashville and since he left Columbus on the bad terms, he's been an absolute beast for the Predators.
Right.
I'm just saying that, you know, they're getting their secondary goal scoring, to your point.
Right.
So once, if they can keep that secondary goal scoring up and then their superstars really get going, as I would expect them to,
yeah,
this team, to me, seems like they're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
I agree.
I was going to say also, out of 8 October games, they had L.A., Chicago twice, Anaheim, San Jose, Dallas, Pittsburgh, Detroit.
Yep. It's a hard schedule.
There are no easy games, as we all know, all that stuff, but that was a tough schedule to lead off the season for sure.
Joel, you had a team that you were most impressed with, I believe.
Yeah, I was, you know what, I mean, this is not exactly digging this one out of, from the deep layers or anything like that, but I'm kind of impressed with the way the Oilers have kicked off their season. You know, this is a team that, let's face it, the last couple of years, 29 wins, 24 wins, 31 wins. I mean, it's been putrid. 6 head coaches in the last 6 seasons. So now with the new regime, Chiarelli, Tom McLellan, I think we all know that Connor McDavid is the real deal, one of the best players in the league. I like the way that they've handled their opponents so far. Now, on the opposite end of Nashville, their schedule has been easy. They have only played 2 playoff teams from last year. Not that that's a huge indicator, just because, again, I guess every single game.
You know, you play the same. You got to play the teams you play the way the schedule works.
But I'm impressed with their structure, especially earlier in the season when, you know, the coach had a pretty strong indictment of his team and he blew that day off rule and all that kind of stuff. So they've picked it up, 7 wins through 10. Pretty good start for a team that's been, let's face it, awful for the better part of the last decade since they went to the Cup Final Game 7 in 06.
Yeah, and Joel, it's hard not to be impressed by the Oilers, and it's not just Connor McDavid. Cam Talbot has been very good carrying over the play from the second half of last season, and I think the defense has surprised me quite a bit. I still think, you know, that defense is really missing one or two pieces, but you got to give Adam Larson and Chris Russell credit. They've come in there and they've played top 4 roles, and you know they're getting some secondary scoring, and you know right now, even though the month of November, the schedule in the month of November, I should say, looks extremely difficult.
Yeah.
You know, the Oilers needed a good start, and they've got that. So, you know, maybe they are going to be in the playoff conversation. I still think that they're a year or two away from being in the playoffs, but certainly, you know, they've put themselves in a good situation here early on.
As a player that is struggling so far this season, that you're sort of disappointed in their performance?
Well, I looked at a player who's impressed me more so than disappointing, but You could easily take Artem Anisimov, who's leading the NHL in scoring right now, but for me it's going to be Jonathan Marchessault. And you look at the Florida Panthers, they signed him to a 2-year contract at $750,000 a year, and it's incredible. The guy has 11 points in 10 games. This is a guy, Drew, who's 25 years old. He was undrafted. And he had his kind of breakout year last year with Tampa Bay. Didn't play a full season. I think he got into 45 games last year, if I'm not mistaken.
That's exactly right.
Had 18 points. But he's playing on the top line. Jonathan Huberdeau's injured, so he's playing on the top line with Alexander Barkov and Jaromir Jagr.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy has just been fantastic. And Colton Sevier was another guy who was signed in the offseason. He's been very good for the Florida Panthers. So for me, it's Jonathan Marchessault. I mean, this guy's a smaller player, but a guy who's doing the most with the opportunity that's been given. He was a big time scorer in the queue, and you know, for me, he's been the guy that's really stood out to me, you know, in the first kind of 10 or so games.
Yeah, full credit to the Florida Panthers pro scouting staff for
able
to find that diamond in the rough.
That pro scouting staff is world class.
Yeah,
keep it up.
World class, all right. Joel, what do you got?
I've got a disappointer.
Please.
And I'm going to go with Andrew Ladd. I'm not sure what you guys were expecting from him. I wasn't expecting him to be leading the league, but I wasn't expecting him to enter last night, 9 games, only 1 assist on the season. This is a guy who, since the Jets arrived in Winnipeg, put up 20 goals, 20-plus, every single season, minus that lockout year a few years ago in which he put up 18. So if people want to prorate those seasons, you can just do the simple math. He's playing with John Tavares. He's 3rd in minutes among forwards on the Islanders. He's getting all the power play time he wants. I mean, he's 2nd power play minutes. He's got plenty of shots on goal, just can't find the back of the net. It's a slow start for a guy who's making a lot of money. to me, it's a little bit of a concern. Again, 10 games, small sample size. This guy can pick it up. We saw how Ladd can be a streaky scorer, especially here in Winnipeg, where he can go, you know, 3-4 games without a point, then all of a sudden get points in 7 or 8 consecutive games. But still, for a team like the Islanders to invest that much money into a player, it's definitely a disappointing start.
Well, to see a guy like him, you know, riding shotgun, you know, to some extent with John Tavares,
one of the better players, one of the best players in the league,
and not be able to put up any points is certainly, I think the Islanders knew when they signed him to that contract that it was going to be bad towards the end of it. But I don't think that they, to your point, that this performance thus far is probably concerning for Garth Snow and Jack Capuano. There was apparently a fire cap chant last night in Brooklyn as the Islanders are off to a slow start. You know,
well, hold on a second. I think the Islanders got to the second round last year, and Jack Capuano, I think, is a very good coach. I think it's a little bit too early for that type of talk. And I realize that the ice has been bad there, and, you know, the Islanders miss Franz Nielsen, and they miss, Kyle Okposo and Matt Martin. But I mean, it's a little too early for that type of talk, I think. That's just my opinion.
No, on this show, we like that you have an opinion.
Which, by the way, that surprised me how they let those two guys go. The Matt Martin one, I don't really
care
about
as much. Yeah,
you know,
he's more the fourth liner. But
of course, the Okposo one and the Franz Nielsen.
They really miss those guys, Joel.
A little curious for sure. But anyways, the Andrew Ladd, I mean, this is a guy where even in Winnipeg, he found those greasy spots. He always, he was almost, I hate saying it, but he was almost like that guy that the Jets had to spark something. I mean, the guy was always putting up a clutch goal at some point, 20-plus every year that he was here. He was, you know, grinding his way to it, getting the greasy spots and that shot of his. You know, good for him to getting that deal, but it's not exactly a great start right
now. And you got to think, guys, that Ladd's going to start putting some points on the board. He is playing with John Tavares.
Yeah, so. An adjustment period. I mean, it's to be expected that there's going to be an adjustment period to a new city and a new team and a new franchise and everything else.
Sure.
So after 10 games, you don't press the panic button, but you start to get really concerned after 20 games.
We can revisit it after 20.
You can. You're going to be here all season long,
sure.
So we can revisit multiple times if we really want to. Should make mention that this segment was brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. When we come back, should they stay in the NHL?
Or should they go
back to junior hockey? You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You have to kind of keep in the back of the mind that, you know, you're still on a tryout, so it's just, you know, this could be the last game, it could be one of many, so I just think that if I play like I have the past a little bit, I think I should be fine.
Calgary Flames rookie Matthew Tkachuk discussing whether or not he's long for the Flames or if he's going to be sent back to junior, as there are a number of teams in the NHL who have those difficult decisions to make where they would burn a year on an entry-level contract once a player plays their 10th game of the season. Some teams, there's obviously no decision to be made. Auston Matthews with the Leafs, Patrick Laine with the Jets. There's no question about it, but for a number of other teams, there is some question to be answered. Should make mention, this segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Just announced, coming to Rumors March 2nd through March 4th, from Saturday Night Live, Jay Farrow going to be performing at Rumors March 2nd through 4th.
Pumped up about that.
As he's very excited about it. Tickets on sale right now. Get them real quick at RumorsComedyClub.com. And a personal favorite of mine, in town until November the 12th, Daryl Lennox.
He's a Rumors veteran.
Daryl is a Rumors veteran. He is one of our most sought-after comedians, and there's a reason why he comes back time and time again. It's because the audience absolutely can't get enough of Daryl Lennox. If you've never seen Daryl, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Daryl, one of my favorites.
Yeah. So where are the tickets? Joel and I want to go.
Well, they're available at rumorscomedyclub.com. I think I just made that perfectly clear.
Was he at the Rady Dinner a couple of years ago?
Yes, he would have been at the Rady Dinner, I believe, a couple of years ago. Or Daryl, maybe, and Alonzo Bowden would have also been at the Rady Dinner.
Yeah.
I think separate years. But both are tremendous comedians. I do highly recommend you check them out. So, gents, as I was mentioning, some teams getting close to that, having to make that 10-game mark decision. Let's start with the Arizona Coyotes. They have three players who they have to decide on. Defenseman Jacob Chychrun. Center Dylan Strome and winger Lawson Crouse, who they acquired from the Florida Panthers in the offseason.
Okay, well, let's get right into this here.
Please.
Jacob Chychrun should have gone higher in the draft, as far as I'm concerned. You know, watching him play, whether it's in the OHL or at the World Under-18s, he went 16th overall to the Arizona Coyotes. If you remember correctly, that was the Pavel Datsyuk trade, the Arizona Coyotes getting that draft pick from the Detroit Red Wings, and surprised a lot of people, guys, by making the team out of camp, but he's played 20 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like he's going anywhere, and I believe he's played in 8 games here, and he's coming up close to 10 games, so I don't think Jacob Chychrun is going anywhere. I could be wrong, but it sounds like Dave Tippett really likes the way he plays, shows a lot of confidence in him. He's been on the top pair, and he's been on the second pair, so for me, I don't think Jacob Chychrun is going to go back to the Ontario Hockey League. As far as Dylan Strome and Lawson Crouse go, I mean, I don't know if Dylan Strome has more to learn or gain by going back to the Ontario Hockey League. I think at this point in the season, with the Arizona Coyotes having a slow start, you could make the argument that, you know, you send them back to the Erie Otters. But as far as I'm concerned, Dylan Strome should be in the NHL. Lawson Crouse, maybe, you know, I think he's been more of a healthy scratch. Dylan Strome has been a healthy scratch as well, I think less times than Lawson Crouse. But certainly you wouldn't expect them guys to keep three rookies in the lineup, especially considering that they already have Max Domi and Anthony Duclair, who are in their second year. So I think one of Lawson Crouse and Dylan Strome is going to go back. And if I was a betting man, I would probably guess that it would be Lawson Crouse.
Another team that's got some decisions to be made are the Calgary Flames. We heard from Matthew Tkachuk off the top of the interview. Your thoughts on Matthew Tkachuk, if you think he was a top five pick this past season in the NHL draft. Do you think Tkachuk is going to...
Sixth overall,
is going to stay with the Flames, or do you think he's going to go back to the London Knights of the OHL?
Well, unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to see the Flames all that much this year, but does he make the team better? That's the key, I guess. That's the obvious statement.
That's a good point.
Is he going to learn anything when he goes back to junior, which kind of goes back to a different argument altogether.
The AHL-CHL argument?
There should at least be an exemption for one player per team to give that team the ability to send a younger player to the American Hockey League. Not unlike with the Jets last year. Mm-hmm. Let's say Nikolaj Ehlers doesn't make the Jets last year. He's going back to Halifax.
Which is stupid, because there was nothing left for him to prove in Halifax.
It's exactly it. So there should be an exemption, and I think that's moving forward with this league getting younger and younger and younger. I mean, you just mentioned Arizona. They have 7 entry-level deals on that team. With this league getting younger, they should have the opportunity to use at least one card on a young guy that's junior eligible to send him to the American Hockey League. The Jets, of course, have the Jack Roslovic factor right now based on him having come through the USHL.
Well, that's what's interesting, and you just mentioned that. There's a number of players throughout the league who are, in that sort of same window, but because they didn't play through junior hockey, because they came through the USHL or they came from overseas, they are AHL eligible. Sebastian Aho in Carolina, Jack Roslovic, of course, here for the Jets.
Sonny Milano last year.
Mikko Rantanen in Colorado. Zach Werenski in Columbus, although he's not going anywhere. He's been playing very well. Joel Eriksson Ek in Minnesota.
Yeah. He's also been very good.
No, Drew, this double standard is sort of unfortunate
Where
Canadian junior players, for lack of a better word, get a little bit screwed in this instance.
Yeah,
and I actually just checked on it. Lawson Crouse has actually played more games than Dylan Strome. Lawson Crouse has played 6, and Dylan Strome has played 4. So I was wrong about that. So, I mean, they might end up sending Dylan Strome back. They might end up sending both players back. But certainly with a guy like Dylan Strome, they have him kind of penciled in as their future number one center. So we'll have to wait and see. Matthew Tkachuk's not going back to London, Drew. Matthew Tkachuk has made this team. Eric Francis wrote about it a couple of days ago in the Calgary Sun. He's been very impressive. He's been playing on the third line with Michael Backlund and Michael Frolik. So Matthew Tkachuk is ready for the NHL. You know, he's going to have his struggles, but, you know, he's scored a couple of goals. And I think, you know, even though London, coming off of that Memorial Cup, they'd love to have him back. I just don't think that they're going to be sending Tkachuk back. I think that he's just too good. And it has nothing to do, I don't think, with necessarily, you know, his development. I think it's just that he can add to the team now.
That's all it is. If the coach thinks that the player makes his team better, why not keep him there? And, you know, just practicing with these pros. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be an everyday player. Practicing, you know, sprinkling in a healthy scratch here and there, watch the game from the press box, you're going to improve as the year progresses, for sure.
Tkachuk's got 1 goal and 4 points in 9 games.
As Bob McKenzie mentions in his great article on this topic, available on TSN.ca, is that it's almost the 9-game/10-game argument isn't as important as the 39-game, 40-game argument. Because once you play 40 games in a season, you are 1 year closer to being eligible for unrestricted free agency. If you only play 25 games, so let's say you play 9 or 10 games, mm-hmm. You burn that year of your entry-level contract, but it doesn't put you 1 year closer to unrestricted free agency. It just means that you're 1 year closer to your entry-level deal being up.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about usage here, and one of the reasons why, you know, that's a Jacob Trouba reference for anybody that didn't pick up on that, unfortunately. But when you're talking about Chychrun, he's going out there every night, and he's playing top 4 minutes for the Coyotes on defense. Dylan Strome and Lawson Crouse have been healthy scratches off and on early in the season, with Dylan Strome being scratched mm-hmm. 4 times than Lawson Crouse. So if you're going to not be confident to put one of these young guys in the lineup, yeah, then you send him back to London or Erie of the OHL. But if you're putting him out there every night and he's contributing and he looks some better than some of your other options on defense or forward, then you keep him up with the big club.
A quick update from Cleveland. You have a 1-1 game now between the Indians and the Cubs. The Indians threatening to put some more runs on the board as they have first and second with 2 outs. Bottom of the third, so far so good. We're going to head home and watch Game 7. Big thank you to everybody who joined us this week on NHL This Week. That, of course, is Michael Landsberg of TSN 1050 and Chuck Plinus of the Macomb Daily to talk about the Red Wings. Big thanks to our sponsors, Keener Jerseys, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, Illegal Curve. For producer Rory, great job behind the board as always. For Joel Marcoux, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday morning at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.